I'm Allison Jacobson, a transformational coach for women in midlife who are ready to rediscover who they were before they took on the roles of mom, partner, caregiver, and manager of everyone in the family. Women who are ready to live out their dreams but don't know or are afraid to take those first steps. I want to help you make midlife the time when you achieve all of your goals. So let's get started. Hi, everybody, and welcome back to another episode of Midlife Mavericks. I'm your host, Allison Jacobson. So glad to have you here today with me. If you are new to this podcast, this is for women in their 40s, 50s, 60s, who really are ready to take bold action and to start living the life of their dreams in midlife. And remember what those were. I do solo episodes. I have guests on who have done incredible things in the second chapter of their lives, as well as experts who can help us in everything from fitness to health and wellness to sex to beauty to money. You name it, we talk about it. And if you like this podcast, please subscribe. Leave a review because that helps other women in midlife find this. And I am committed to creating an army of us because we are powerful and together we can change the world. Today, my guest is Dr. John Neustadt, the founder and president of Nutritional Biochemistry. Dr. Neustadt earned his naturopathic medical degree from Bastyr University, where he was awarded the Founders Award for academic and clinical excellence. Dr. Neustadt has published more than 100 medical articles, written 4 health and wellness books, and is now a number one Amazon best-selling author in the field of osteoporosis. His most recent book is Fracture Proof Your Bones, A Comprehensive Guide to Osteoporosis. Dr. Neustadt, thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
So first I want to start with, can you explain a little bit, what is functional medicine?
Functional medicine is, as I think it implies, looking at the body from within a lens of how it's functioning. So people, I think, sometimes can think of that and conceptualize it quite easily in terms of, how, just walking and living pain-free and having your mood optimized and energy optimized. But when you go to a conventional approach or conventionally trained physician, most of the time they're just treating symptoms. So for example, for mood, an antidepressant to just mask that symptom or help artificially elevate the mood, which can be the right thing to do, absolutely. But there are other approaches too, looking at the underlying biochemistry or how the body is functioning. For example, with mood, we know the hormones involved in elevating mood, serotonin, dopamine, just to name a couple of them. And we know all of the precursors that our body needs to produce healthy amounts of that. And we can test that now. We can test the amino acids, we can test the vitamins and the minerals, everything that's needed to produce those hormone levels and actually see, are those hormone levels low, functionally low in patients or not. There's, symptoms can be quite complicated. There could be many things, that causing any one symptom. And so when we think functionally, that's really about looking and trying to get to the underlying cause through that lens of nutritional biochemistry or medical biochemistry.
I've had a lot of experts on here talking about this, and this is, to me, a really important topic. Do you think traditional medicine is changing more to recognize this? Are they starting to look at this more in medical schools, or is it still the same tradition as it has been in the past?
It's slowly changing. There's a lot of inertia. These are huge systems that are very complicated, not just with respect to getting people in there that have the academic and clinical expertise to be able to conceptualize and teach other doctors how to do this, but also from an insurance reimbursement point of view, from a patient management point of view, from a systems point of view within hospitals and clinics. There are a lot of entrenched interests. These things are not patentable. And so they really don't, you know, they're not, it's not medications. It's mostly just nutrients and nutritional medicine. And so the financial incentives are not there like they are when you talk about prescribing medications and pharmaceutical companies that are sponsoring educational seminars and paying for doctors to prescribe their medication, which is technically it is illegal, but there are ways in which they incentivize institutions and doctors to still prescribe their medication. So it's just it's a different business model, which has its own challenges.
Yeah. And in my opinion, it's very frustrating. We've spoken a lot about, specifically when it comes to anxiety, women who are perimenopausal or menopausal, and they go into a doctor and immediately they're just given an anti-anxiety med, rather than looking at the hormones or talking about perimenopause or menopause. And I just find it incredibly frustrating. And that's one of the reasons I do this podcast, because I want people to become advocates for themselves, to understand that there are different ways of looking at this. I think it's so important.
Absolutely. And one of the challenges with that pharmacy first approach to medicine is that it creates potentially a lot of other problems. So with the anxiety medications that you mentioned, especially as people get older, that increases the risk for falls and fractures, as has been associated with increased dementia risk. With respect to the antidepressants, we now know that women taking antidepressants, specifically anything that artificially raises serotonin, like Lexapro or Prozac, one of those, that for every 19 of them taking it for 1 to 5 years, we'd expect one additional fracture because it damages bone, causes osteoporosis, and creates fractures in people.
Now, so that's one I haven't heard before. That's scary and incredible, because I'll be honest, I can't think of anybody I know who's not on some sort of anti-anxiety, antidepressant. I mean, it feels like the whole country is. Is it more with women than men, though, in terms of the bone density?
No, not necessarily in terms of the bone density, but the majority of those prescriptions are written for women. Mm-hmm. The majority of the research that I've seen has been done on women, and that's partially because, you know, osteoporosis is a condition that affects women more than men. About 80% of osteoporosis cases are in women, about 20% in men. But there's no reason for me, at least, to think that it also wouldn't be damaging bones in men as well.
So let's get into it, because I was recently diagnosed with osteopenia, I believe it is.
Kenia.
Before. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so I've been doing a lot of strength training and calcium, but what are some of the biggest misconceptions out there about osteoporosis?
I think the biggest misconception that I find is that, I mean, first of all, there are a lot of them. First of all, I think the biggest misconception is that if you just improve your bone density, then you're protected. And this goes back for me, you know, 17, 18 years now. When I first started to get involved in this research, the reason was because I was having patients come to me with osteoporosis, and my mother-in-law has osteoporosis. She was taking Fosamax. Her bone density was going up. I was helping her with some nutritional recommendations, but you know, her bone density was going up. So she was happy. Her doctor was happy. Patients who I was working with, my patients, their bone density was going up. And then my mother-in-law fell and broke her hip. Mm. And I thought to myself, what, there's something wrong with this picture. And as I started to dive more and more into the research and sort of tease these pieces apart, what I learned was shocking. And that is that a bone density test, which is primarily what's being treated, just that number on the test, only predicts 44% of women with osteoporosis who will break a bone, and only 21% of men. In fact, there are position papers published by national organizations that have correctly concluded that fracture risk depends on factors largely other than bone density. Yet that is almost exclusively what's being treated. And so women are walking out around, people are believing they're protected, being told they're safe when they're not. And we can do a lot better, because it is a deadly, deadly condition. If you are a woman with osteoporosis and fracture a hip, there's up to about a 35% chance that you're going to be dead within a year. For those who survive, 50% approximately never regain their total pain-free enjoyment of life, and about 30% even still struggle with just their activities of daily living. That's and need ongoing care, you know, dressing themselves, showering, going to the bathroom, that sort of thing. And in fact, if you know, a woman's risk of an osteoporosis fracture is greater than her combined risk, or is the same essentially of her combined risk of breast, uterine, and ovarian cancer. And lastly, just to drive this point home, if you're a woman over 45, osteoporosis accounts for more days spent in a hospital than other conditions like heart attacks, diabetes, and breast cancer.
That is amazing, because we hear so much about breast cancer, so much about heart health. And yeah, we kind of hear about osteoporosis, but never in the thought of landing in the hospital and the mortality rates. That's incredible.
And I love to share that with people because I think it is incredible. And it shocks people a little bit into paying a bit more attention to this crucial tissue that's in our body that does so much more than gives us structure and allows us to stand upright and hug our loved ones and run and walk and do all those things we love. It's actually producing our immune cells and our red blood cells, our platelets. It's a very important dynamic tissue that I hope through these interviews and through the work that I'm doing in my book, I'm helping people to appreciate it more and learn what they can do to not just prevent osteoporosis, but we can reverse it. It can absolutely be reversed.
You're throwing so much at us that I never knew. I'm sure my listeners never knew. And it's mind-blowing. So if the bone density test isn't it, that's with the osteoporosis, what is? What are we supposed to be looking for? How do we even know?
Well, in terms of testing, I wish the state of the research was different. The bone density test is still the gold standard. That's what all other tests are measured against. And there's machines that can test, like a bone density test is an X-ray. All that tests for, by the way, is your minerals. For example, you have calcium in the bone, the amount of minerals you have. But like I mentioned, the bone is a tissue. It's a lot more than just minerals. There is about 180 to 200 different proteins alone in bone. The predominant protein, the structural protein, is collagen, type 1 collagen. There are blood tests we can run to test and see, is that collagen breaking down? There's nothing that can quantify the amount of collagen you have in the bone. But even those tests have their limitations in terms of being able to predict fractures. A lot of it is just getting different pieces of the puzzle to piece together your overall fracture risk. And in fact, the biggest risk for fractures is falling. 95% of fractures occur because somebody falls. And the most predictive variable for fractures and falls is somebody's gait and mobility. So, you know, muscle mass, balance, that's why exercise and diet are so important. But it's way beyond just looking at that bone mineral density test result. It's important to get. I do recommend people get bone density testing. I recommend they track with repeat bone density tests, but I also counsel patients to put that test in its correct perspective. Don't give it too much value. It's just one piece of a larger puzzle.
Are you ever scrolling through your social media channels and see all of these ads for skincare and moisturizer and think, sure, it looks great on her. She's 20 years old, but what about me? Well, that's exactly what I always think. Where is the skincare line for women in perimenopause and menopause and midlife? Well, Joy Kirsch thought the same thing when she was having so many symptoms from menopause, including hormonal acne and dry skin, and that's why she created Modern Age Skin. Modern Age Skin is a brand formulated with sophisticated, bioadaptive, bioactive formulas that use high-quality and naturally based ingredients to treat the unique symptoms of perimenopause and menopause. I've been using Modern Age Skin's The Innovator Luminous Repair Oil. It's the ultimate multitasker and helps skin repair itself from dryness, inflammation, discoloration, loss of elasticity, and even acne flare-ups that happen during hormone fluctuations during perimenopause and menopause. It can be used during the day under sunscreen and makeup, and as the last step in your evening skincare routine to help your skin barrier repair itself when you sleep. There are a lot of days where I don't even wear makeup. I just put on the oil after my moisturizer, and my skin just has this beautiful, soft glow to it. It just feels so great on my skin. So go to modernageskin.com and check out the Innovator Luminous Repair Oil and enter MIDMAV15 at checkout for 15% off. That's MIDMAV15 at checkout for 15% off. One of the things I've heard in the past is we hear when women fall, that's it, if they break their hip and everything. But I heard from somebody, it's not that your bone breaks because you fell, it's your bone has already weakened to the point that it makes you fall. Is there any truth in that? Or what is it really that you just said, it's your gait and your mobility, but is it the shuffling? What is it?
So shuffling can create a problem. There's a chapter in my book called Fracture Proof Your Home, and that's very important, looking at environmental causes of falls. If you have throw rugs, for example, you know, you can get caught on that, loose steps, you can trip over that. That's important. So it's multifactorial. Muscle mass tends to peak when people are in their 30s. And if you're then it's more sedentary and you're not exercising, then you can start to lose muscle mass, and muscle weakness, specifically quadriceps weakness, is a risk for falls and fractures. And also what we know is that as you get older, the recommendation, the RDA, the recommended daily allowance for protein for adults, is insufficient as people to get older to maintain muscle and bone. So looking at the research in my book, I have specific recommendations, target recommendations for diet. And one of those is protein. And people should get about 0.6 grams of protein per pound of body weight per day minimum. And that should be enough with resistance exercise to build muscle back. There's a clinical trial that was published recently that looked at elderly all the way up to over 85 years old. And even in the elderly, we can still build muscle back. These tissues are alive, muscle, bone, we can build them back. And in fact, the amount of protein somebody consumes, even just within that normal range of protein, can account for 2 to 4% of bone mineral density.
Wow.
So that protein component is often overlooked from nutritional recommendations in terms of how much somebody should get. Vegetables and fruits, you know, we know those are very helpful, but what's often missing is the amount of protein. And typically with balance, there are things that people can do even just in their daily lives to improve their balance. I love teaching the stork exercise, practical things. You know, storks love standing on one foot. So while you're brushing your teeth, you know, you stand on one foot for the bottom teeth and then switch to the top teeth, you know, switch the other foot, and you're balancing on one leg for, you know, a couple minutes at a time, a couple times a day. And that can help improve your balance. So there's things that people can just do within their daily lives, as well as, of course, taking exercise classes or, you know, other routines that can help.
Right. I want to get back to the protein because we recently had a guest on here who was saying women in midlife and older should get up to close to 100 grams of protein, almost doubling what they think. Is there something as too much protein, or where does that fall?
So if you have chronic kidney disease, you may want to be on a low protein diet or lower protein diet. I have seen recommendations go all the way up to, you know, 2 grams per kilogram body weight per day, but I have not seen any clinical trials or data really supporting that. That can be very hard. It can be challenging just to get, 0.6. You know, for me, if I just calculate, you know, 0.6, I'm about 150 pounds. I'm going to do this quickly here.
I'm glad you have a calculator.
You know, that's 90 grams, right, of protein a day. You know, that's a lot. If you're going to then increase that by 40% right. or even more, that's a lot. So people can get it through diet. Dietary supplements, I believe, should be used just as the FDA intended. That is a supplement to a healthy diet. Start with diet, start with lifestyle. But then, for example, I have a hard time consuming that much protein a day, which I do. That's my target. And so I supplement. I supplement with protein powder or a protein drink to bridge that gap.
Right. And I didn't know, I just recently found out rye bread has 2 grams of protein, which I never would have known. And oatmeal, half a cup, has like 4 grams of protein, something like that. So people don't realize it's not just eating more beef or chicken. There's a lot of other ways to get that protein in. And I'm the same as you. I do a protein shake, but there are a lot of ways people don't know. So you said we can reverse osteoporosis. Mm-hmm. That's just fascinating to me because, you know, you think once it's there, you can't go back. How do you go back? Just by doing this?
No, it's about restoring balance to the system. It's about understanding how bones function, what they need to do their job, because naturally our biochemistry, our physiology, it wants to be healthy. It wants to thrive. Once we give it the raw materials and remove toxins that can be damaging it, it will naturally begin to strengthen and grow and heal itself. And so it's a holistic approach. And what I like to do is ask, you know, teach people the questions to ask. So whenever you're being recommended something, especially when it comes to bone health, the most important question is, not only has it been shown to improve a number on a test, meaning that bone density test result, but has it been shown in research to maintain bone strength as indicated by fewer fractures? Because that's the ultimate test of bone strength. Do you break a bone or not? And so there's research-based ways that people can approach this that we know maintain strong bones and reduces fractures. So I talked about the medications, anything that's damaging to bone that you're putting into your system. You know, let's see if that can be switched to a safer medication, decrease the dose of the medication, or eliminate it altogether, because it's a similar story with the vast majority of the medications. The higher the dose and the longer somebody is on it, the greater the risk in terms of side effects, and specifically with bones. The other thing then is giving your body the raw materials it needs to function, giving your biochemistry and your bones the raw material they need to function. So I talked about protein, but it's not just about one nutrient. It's about the overall dietary pattern. And what the research shows is that the Mediterranean style dietary pattern is associated with not only a 20% reduction in osteoporosis risk, but more importantly, a 21% reduction in hip fracture risk, which is the most dangerous type of fracture, as well as reducing somebody's risk for breast cancer, death from breast cancer, diabetes, obesity, cardiovascular disease, all-cause mortality. The list goes on and on. What we know when we're doing healthy things, healthy diet, healthy exercise, healthy sleep, not only is it going to help with bones, but it's going to boost your health and your vitality and your energy throughout your body, which are great things. I mentioned sleep. A lot of people don't really consider sleep as a risk for osteoporosis, but it is. If you're sleeping, if you have insomnia or difficulty sleeping, you're sleeping less than 6 hours a night on average, that's associated with an increased rate of bone loss and an increased osteoporosis risk. Plus, it increases your risk for falls and fall-related injuries. And so making sure you're getting adequate sleep is really important. Making sure that you are connected in your community, that you have friends and a network. There's research looking at osteoporosis and social networks that show that if somebody has a healthy social network and they fracture a hip, they recover easier, they recover faster.
That is, so, you're blowing my mind.
All these things are connected. All these facets of health are connected. So then there's obviously, there's exercise. You know, doing exercise safely is important, but people ask me, what's the best type of exercise? Well, the best type of exercise is the exercise that somebody's going to do consistently.
Right.
And you don't have to go into a gym. You're gardening, walking alone, and it doesn't have to be 10,000 steps a day. Walking 5,000 to 7,000, or no, I'm sorry, walking 7,000 steps per day on average is associated with a 50 to 70% reduction in all-cause mortality, which includes dying from osteoporosis.
That is amazing. Now, I have a question. My mom is on an infusion drug. I can't remember which one that she does twice a year for osteoporosis. For people who are already on osteoporosis drugs or something, what do you say to that?
Well, there are reasons to be on them. There's a whole chapter on the medications in my book, and it gives questions to ask their doctors to make sure they're getting the best recommendation. So a lot of people think, a fracture is a fracture is a fracture. Like, okay, and you see these medications that are marketed as reducing fractures or marketing as improving bone density. Well, first of all, studies have shown that the change in bone density caused by an osteoporosis medication is not actually an indicator that it's reducing fractures. The second important thing to understand is that there's a big difference between primary fracture prevention and secondary fracture prevention, meaning if you've never broken a bone with osteoporosis before, we're trying to prevent you from breaking your first bone, having your first osteoporosis fracture. That's called primary fracture prevention. There is only one medication that's been shown to reduce both vertebral and hip fractures if you've never had one before, and that's Zometa. She may be getting that, intravenous Zometa. And the other ones, though, the oral bisphosphonates, don't do that. They don't reduce both vertebral and hip fractures if you've never had one. If you've had a fracture before, then it's called secondary fracture prevention, and there are a lot more options. The medications are much more effective. Most of the clinical trials, the vast majority of the clinical trials on the medications were done on very high-risk people, most of them already having had a fracture. So these are really secondary prevention studies. And the research, and in the real world, when you get out there in the real world as well, it's very interesting because it's not a controlled environment like a clinical trial. And what we know with the oral bisphosphonates, because of the side effects, about 50% of the people discontinue, stop taking it within the first year, right? Yeah. So you have to then, if you're going to take a medication, you've got to understand what the commitment needs to be. You have to take a medication 70 to 80% of the time in order to get the benefits.
Right.
And so you're going to have to commit to taking it for years. So I walk people through that thought process of like, okay, here's how to evaluate. Here are the questions to ask, just to make sure that you're making the best decision for your own health.
Yeah. We're talking to Dr. John Neustadt, and his new number one Amazon best-selling book is Fracture Proof Your Bones, A Comprehensive Guide to Osteoporosis. And truly, the things I am learning right now are absolutely amazing. One of the other things that I know you talk about and I want to get into is the benefits, the challenges of supplements, dietary supplements, and evaluating what's right. I know, I mean, my social media channel, I just get inundated with try this, try this. And I take a lot of supplements as well, some vitamins and things like that. But how do we know what we really should be taking? And how do you judge whether it's good or not?
Great questions. And I love educating people about this because we want to get the value for our money. We want to make sure you're taking something that is going to work and does what it says it's going to do. There are a few things that I look for and I teach people to look for. If there are minerals in the formula, you want to look for anything that has oxide minerals in it or sulfate. If it says magnesium sulfate or magnesium oxide or copper sulfate, something like that, if it has any of that in it, then that's not the best quality because our body can barely absorb those. Minerals don't exist by themselves in supplements. They have to be attached to a carrier molecule. And when it's an oxide or a sulfate form, it's very poorly absorbed. You can only absorb about 2% of that nutrient. So when it says 100 milligrams of magnesium as magnesium oxide, you're actually getting maybe 2 milligrams that is absorbed into your body. The rest is going right through you and out your poop. And so just that simple thing alone, just look at the minerals, that'll tell you the overall quality. The other thing is a lot of companies will cite research supporting their formulations. And I'll give you an example when it comes to bone health. You want to look for that it's not just saying, oh, it's going to change a number on a test, or we have this this clinical data showing that it changes a number on a test. You want to see, is there actual research showing that it improves your health, how you feel, how strong your body is, something of that sort. Then also though, and this is one of my pet peeves, especially when it comes to bone health supplements, is that people will cite research and then they'll cite research supporting the use of a nutrient. And then they'll use less of that nutrient that was ever shown in the clinical trial to work, or they'll use a different form of it. So vitamin K is a great example. Vitamin K2 is a category of molecules. Vitamin E is the same. It's a category, different types of vitamin E. With vitamin K2, there are two forms primarily found in dietary supplements, MK4 and MK7. Now, MK7 is quite popular and people will say, oh, it's more bioavailable or it lasts longer in the blood, so you only have to take it once a day. Well, that's great. Those are laboratory tests. That's not clinically or, you know, in terms of how you feel. That's not anything having to do with your health. Just because the half-life is longer and the half-life of a nutrient or any molecule is how long does it take for 50% of that substance to be broken down and eliminated by the body. That doesn't mean that it's more effective. So MK7 has never been shown to improve bone density in clinical trials, only slow down how fast somebody loses bone density. But more importantly, it's never been shown to maintain strong bones as indicated by fewer fractures in any clinical trials. In contrast, MK4, and only in the amount of 45 milligrams per day, there are over 25 clinical trials on it. It's been shown repeatedly, not just to stop the loss of bone density, but improve bone density. But more importantly, it's been shown to maintain strong bones as indicated by over 70% fewer fractures in clinical trials. Mm-hmm. So even when people will use or companies may use the MK4, most of the time it's going to be in, you know, 1 milligram or 5 milligram. And this was a frustration I had back when I was starting on this path, you know, 2007, working with patients, trying to help them. I could not find the dose and combination of nutrients shown in clinical trials to work for different things I was trying to help my patients with. That's why I started MBI, my supplement company, because I needed to provide the solution to help them.
Interesting. And I have to admit, I take K2 and I have no idea which one it is.
It's probably the MK7. I'm still, you know, my products, OsteoK and OsteoK Minis, are still the only products in the country that have that clinical dose of MK4, 45 milligrams per day with calcium and vitamin D. So much so that we guarantee it.
And when you see, and maybe I fall into this too, where it says third party research or third party trials, does that really mean anything?
Well, look, it means that they've got some research supporting their formula. The question is the research supporting the right, are they asking the right questions? Is the data the most clinically relevant data? If they're saying, oh, our research shows that it improves bone density, well, that's interesting. That's a number on a test. My question that I teach people to ask is, do they have clinical trials showing that the nutrients in their products maintain strong bones as indicated by the most important indicator? And that is, hasn't been shown to reduce fractures in clinical trials.
Right. Now, I hear you talking about K2. What are some other important supplements? And are these things that we just can't get enough of in our regular diet, or most people don't?
So if we're talking just about bone health, there are only four nutrients that meet my criteria for being sort of the gold standard or the best that you can get. And that is the criteria being, they don't just improve bone density, but they actually maintain strong bones as shown by fewer fractures in clinical trials. It's calcium and vitamin D, MK4, 45 milligrams per day, and a mineral called strontium.
Strontium, now, never heard
strontium.
Of that.
So I'm not a fan of using strontium. It's available as a dietary supplement in the US. All of the research on strontium came out of Europe. It was approved as a medication in Europe for osteoporosis in a form of strontium called strontium ranelate. Now, strontium is a mineral. It incorporates into the bones just like calcium does. So if you take strontium as strontium citrate, typically in the US, that's the form of the mineral in dietary supplements. Because it incorporates into the bone, and is heavier than calcium molecularly. And because the bone density test is an X-ray, so the X-ray goes into your bone, bounces off the minerals, and that angle called the refractive index is what's detected by the machinery and spits out the bone density test result. Well, our machinery here can't correct for strontium being a heavier mineral. And so strontium gives you false bone density test results. Mm. So the results you get are not accurate. So that's a problem for me. But more importantly, I have an issue with the safety and efficacy of that mineral. So there have been 6 large clinical trials in Europe done. Only 5 of them showed that strontium ranilate prevented five of the 6 showed that it only prevented vertebral fractures, not hip fractures. Only 1 prevented hip fractures. And so that to me is an open question. How effective is it? But there's a big safety question. It was taken off the market. It was recalled because post-marketing studies in Europe determined that for every 1 fracture that you're preventing, it was causing a blood clot in people that could create a stroke or a heart attack.
Oh my gosh.
Now in the US, strontium citrate, there are no clinical trials showing that it's safe or effective. It may be just as safe and effective as strontium ranilate. It may be safer, it may be more effective. We have no idea. Mm. That's why I do not use and do not recommend that mineral. Why it's my formulation and very simple, MK4 calcium and vitamin D. The other nutrients that you see often in bone health supplements, boron, magnesium, phytoestrogens, never been shown to reduce fractures as supplements. And you can get them in diet. You should be getting them in diet when you're eating a whole foods diet.
Right. And the calcium and the vitamin D, especially the vitamin D, I think many people think, well, I live in a climate where I'm always outside, so I don't need vitamin D. I'm getting enough sunshine. True? Not true?
Not true. Even in Arizona, there's research where it's sunny, often a lot, that there's a high rate of vitamin D deficiency. And if you're in, the northern hemisphere above, kind of an imaginary line from, I think, Santa Cruz in California, east, anytime in the winter months, the sun doesn't get high enough in the sky to activate the vitamin D receptors in your skin to form and create vitamin D. So it's estimated that about 40% overall in adults are deficient in vitamin D. And so it's an important nutrient. I like testing vitamin D levels and then supplementing as is appropriate. But most people seem to need additional vitamin D as a dietary supplement.
So you have your book and you work with patients one-on-one. Do you have group classes? How do you work with people?
So I currently, the inquiries that we've been getting and the demand is so overwhelming right now that I've stepped back. I do some telehealth with people just on a volunteer basis, but I'm in the process of creating an online course, taking my book, and I'm also working on the second edition of the book. I've expanded the topics. For example, I just did 2 medical lectures at medical conferences on cancer treatment-induced osteoporosis. I spoke at a gastroenterology conference on the gut-bone connection. And so that and the other parts of the book, that sort of stuff didn't make it into the first edition, but that's going to be part of this course that we're developing and we'll launch later this year.
Terrific. And I am so excited to announce that for my listeners, you have a free copy of your book. Is that correct?
Yes.
Perfect. And we will have that link in the show notes. Dr. Neustadt, this has been absolutely amazing. If people also want to get your supplements, where can they go to get that?
NBIHealth.com, NBIHealth.com.
Perfect. And we will put that in the show notes as well. This has been so enlightening. And every time after podcasts, I tell my friends and family what I'm doing, but this one I'm specifically going to go and talk to my mom about. This has been wonderful. Thank you so much. And everybody have a great week, and I'll see you next week. Bye now.